Fantasy Football Today Dynasty. I am your host, Heath Cummings, joined by a very special guest, Matt Cooper, a.k.a. Couch Scouts Fantasy Football, Couch Scouts FF on Twitter. Now, Matt, I know, and I just want to start with this, because I know when you and I started talking about you coming on the show, it wasn't Couch Scouts. So tell everybody what Couch Scouts is and what's going on with the new name.
That's right. Yeah, we just recently rebranded. So I launched what was then called Devy to Dynasty Film Room about 2.5 years ago. This is kind of something that I do in my free time. In my daily life, I'm a campus minister. So, you know, you and I have that faith in Christ in common. But I launched this YouTube channel. I was about 30 years old. I'd always thought about doing it. I actually had just had a kid. And so I was at home for a month on paternity leave. And I was like, all right. So I dug in. I taught myself video editing and how to make thumbnails and the whole thing. It just went for it. And, a couple weeks ago, I was talking with my co-hosts. And I said, I really think we need a rebrand. Devy to Dynasty Film Room is kind of a mouthful. Every time I tell anybody in real life, like what my channel name is, they're like immediately like, what's Devy? How do you spell that? Nobody can find it. So I thought, what is it exactly that we do? We scout. We get into the film. We watch prospects. We look for strengths and weaknesses, how that translates to fantasy points. And at the end of the day, we're just guys on our couch. We're fans just like everybody else. And so that's kind of how we thought of the name. Like, well, what are we? We're Couch Scouts. So we rebranded and hopefully, most of our content, we do cover some Devy stuff, but most of our content is really just geared towards your typical dynasty player,
right?
Or even just people who love the draft, love talking football. And so hopefully this name feels more accessible to more people. And along with the name, we launched a brand new Discord. So we're trying to make it less of like content to consume and more of kind of a community that people can join and come be a part of, join the Couch Scouts. And so I'll send you the link, Heath, for the Discord if you want to throw it in the description and people can come. It's totally free to anybody. We've got guys in there every day talking trades, talking about these rookies, talking news as it breaks. We were buzzing the other day with free agency. We were talking about the combine. So definitely would love for people to come and join the community.
That's awesome stuff. And you mentioned that prior name, the Devy to Dynasty. We are going to talk a little bit of Devy today.
Yeah.
We're going to talk a lot of rookies today. And those really go hand in hand this time of year, because these rookies we're talking about technically aren't in the NFL yet. They're still in college. So it works out perfectly. We do start our show with three questions for the guest. The first question is the same for every guest, though it's changed a little bit in the last couple of weeks because I was tired of people answering Superflex. So what is your one non-negotiable rule or setting for joining a new dynasty league? And you cannot say Superflex.
I would say hosted on Sleeper. It's not a rule or a setting, but for me, and it's nothing against any of the other platforms. I just have been on Sleeper ever since I started, and I've got a lot of leagues and they're all on Sleeper. And so for me to have a whole separate app just for like one league, I just don't want to do it. I just want to keep it all consolidated. So for me personally, that's a must. If it's a paid league, I prefer for it to be paid 2 years up front so that people aren't, trading all their picks to try to win and then bail on the league. And then this is a big one, no vetoes. All right. If two consenting adults are making a trade that they think is making their dynasty team better and you don't have proof of collusion, don't veto that thing. You are not, you're as a commissioner, you're not in there to play God and micromanage what you think is fair for everybody else and run their teams for them. So that's a big one for me.
Absolutely love that one. Adam Azer wouldn't totally agree, but that's how we know we're right. What exactly, question number two, what exactly is a Devy league?
All right, so it's Dynasty. It's kind of a niche within Dynasty. So a Devy league is a Dynasty league, but you can draft anyone in college. Sometimes even high school. Some Devy leagues, you can literally draft high schoolers. And so Devy kind of stands for developmental. And so you are projecting years out, saying, hey, I think this kid eventually is going to be an NFL player. I'm going to sit him on my taxi squad, and he's going to sit there until – if and when he gets drafted to the NFL, and when that happens, he moves up to your dynasty squad. So it's kind of like having a farm league. But these college guys, they're just sitting on your taxi squad. You're not getting points for how they're doing in college. It doesn't matter. Their college production doesn't matter. The end goal is that one day they're NFL players and they're going to be on your dynasty team.
So that kind of takes the place of like a rookie draft each year, because those guys are already on your roster. Okay. We will definitely talk more about that in just a little bit. In fact, right now, what's your elevator pitch? Because you said like a lot of people don't know what Devy is. A lot of people have never tried it. A lot of us who play fantasy football are of the age now where new things were like, huh, it's new. I don't know about that. What's your elevator pitch for like somebody telling somebody they should try a Devy League?
Yeah, so, you know, I think it gives you more reasons to watch college football, as if you really needed any more. So for me, I was always more on the NFL side of things. Like I would watch my college team. I graduated from NC State. I would watch NC State. But whenever I was turning it on and it would be like, you know, Red River rivalry, Oklahoma versus Oklahoma State, I just didn't get that into it because I didn't care who won. And so Devy has kind of given me more reasons to watch college football. It's like now when I'm watching these two teams that I don't care who wins, now I'm watching it with the eye of a scout. I've got specific players that I'm going into it saying, hey, I'm excited to see this guy play. And so I also think it's made me a better dynasty player because I've got a better feel for the strength of these upcoming draft classes. Like, you know, it's really good to know. I think that next year there's a ton of good running backs coming out. But if you need a quarterback, don't hope that they're coming in next year's draft class because it's a pretty weak one. So, you know, I think it's good to know some of those things.
How steady is that? Because I know, like, if we looked at this class last year, we certainly wouldn't have been too excited about Jaden Daniels, I don't think.
Right.
I remember like Joe Burrow kind of came out of nowhere that last year. Like how often does that happen? And how often do you find that the year before you did have a pretty good grip on who those guys were going to be?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think, there's always people that rise to the surface during their last year, at least a few. And that's actually when you're playing Devy. So you still have a rookie draft. It's just depleted by all the people that were already rostered.
Okay.
So for example, in all of my Devy leagues right now that I'm in, Jaden Daniels is not already rostered in a single one of them. So when we get into that depleted rookie draft, Jaden Daniels is going to be the 101 everywhere. And so there are always at least a few decent rookie picks left, even after, you know, guys have been rostered on Devy for years and years and years. But for the most part, I mean, like if you were asking me at the very end of the 2022 draft cycle, in fact, I remember doing this for Dynasty Nerds. I was writing an article like way too early, 2023 first round mock draft. And it was, you know, Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, Quentin Johnston, you know, a lot of the guys that ended up being Michael Mayer had in it, who ended up being more of a second round guy. But, you know, I was able to list off 12 names like easily. And all those guys, for the most part, there were a few that ended up being pretty big disappointments, like a Zach Evans. But for the most part, most of those guys ended up being the names that mattered a year later. The one guy that wasn't in that article was Anthony Richardson.
Right.
So there's always a few guys that kind of come out of nowhere. But for the most part, these guys that are NFL producers, they've been doing it in college for years. They've been on people's radars. Maybe they were a highly graded recruit coming into college. So I would say probably at least 75 to 80% of the guys that we're going to end up caring about are guys that have been on Devy radars for a while.
Awesome stuff. We'll take our first break. When we come back, we'll dig a little bit more into Devy. Okay, so we are back. We are definitely going to talk this 2024 rookie class here in just a few minutes. But I do have a few more questions about just like if you may have just sold somebody ready to set up a Devy league and they've got absolutely no idea how they're going to do that or what that looks like. And so like what does this look like when you're initially setting it up? How do you have an ideal setting for how many college players you should be able to have on that taxi squad?
Yeah, so roster sizes are generally pretty much the same as a regular dynasty league.
Right.
But and I will say I've never actually commissioned a Devy league. I've played in a lot of them. I've not been a commish. But the taxi squad typically is like unlimited size, actually. So you don't want to limit somebody on like, okay, I'm trying to rebuild. I want to trade my NFL players for all these Devy guys, but now I'm capped. I can only have like five of them. These are basically in place of your draft picks in a lot of ways. So you don't want to limit that.
So is the number of Devy guys you have takes away from the number of players you have on your active roster? It's not in addition to the active roster?
No, it doesn't affect. It'd be like, you know, if you're in a regular dynasty league and you're just accumulating for future firsts, like that's not going to, you don't have to take away a player on your roster for every future draft pick that you trade for.
Okay.
So that's kind of how, now there may be some Devy leagues, obviously just like dynasty, there's a million different variations and every league kind of has its own settings and stuff. But for the most part, those taxi squads are not limited. They don't impact your active roster spots. You can acquire as many Devy players as you want to acquire. So one of the main things that I think you need to consider when you are starting up a Devy league, one is how deep do you want your Devy startup to do? So typically you'll do an NFL startup draft just like you would in any other dynasty league, and then you'll do a Devy startup. And it could be anywhere from three rounds all the way up to, you know, some of them are crazy and they go like 20 rounds and there's nobody left at the end. The ones that I do are usually around 6 to 8 rounds.
Right.
Of Devy guys that are getting drafted and put on your taxi squads. And but how deep you go in that initial startup draft really determines how depleted your future rookie drafts are.
Right.
So the more guys that you take in that startup, the less valuable your future picks are going to be, the less fun your rookie draft is going to be. So I like kind of finding a little bit of a balance there. So for example, you know, Jaden Daniels is available in this league. Actually, pretty much all the leagues that I'm in, Jaden Daniels is available in this depleted draft, but Caleb Williams is not, Drake May is not, Marvin Harrison Jr. is not. Like, they're pretty heavily depleted. So the 101 it might be Jaden Daniels, and then the drop off to 102, I mean, it could be pretty steep. So depending on the league, you know, Romo Dunze might be there. Keon Coleman is usually available in most of these leagues because he kind of came onto the scene this year.
Do you think there's any more reliability with the guys? Like when you're looking at it as, well, this guy's been on a Devy roster for 2 years versus this guy who's now a first round pick in the rookie draft. Are you more likely to believe in the guy who you guys have, who's been worth rostering in a Devy league for longer?
Not necessarily, because I think, I mean, you listed a bunch that have come out of nowhere and popped. I mean, Puka Nacua, right? You mentioned Joe Burrow. There's so many. And so we don't know everything. And these guys, a lot of times we don't leave room for players to get better. Like Jaden Daniels has been starting for 5 years and he just looks way better than he ever has at any other point in his college career. And when I study the tape, he looks like a great player to me. So I'm not knocking him just because he wasn't a five-star recruit or he's not been sitting on my Devy roster for 3 years. Like, I think Jaden Daniels is great.
Right. So you mentioned that there's still an annual rookie draft.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that means that there's also an annual Devy draft.
Correct. And so one of the big decisions that you need to make when you are starting up a Devy league is, are we going to combine those where within the same draft, players can choose either a depleted rookie or a future Devy? So maybe you're sitting at 102 and there's a steep drop off from Jaden Daniels to the next guy and it's a combined. And you're like, hey, instead of taking the equivalent of what would be like a late second round rookie, I'm just going to go ahead and throw a dart on this incoming five-star freshman, and he's going to sit on my taxi squad. So like you might see it go 101 Jaden Daniels, 102 Jeremiah Smith, the five-star coming into Ohio State. So that, I think I prefer it that way. So some people will do the depleted rookie in one and then a depleted Devy immediately after. But I just think the rookie picks are so thin at that point.
Right.
That the depleted rookie draft and the depleted rookie picks almost become worthless.
Right.
Whereas if it's combined, even like a fourth round pick is valuable because in the fourth round, you're going to want, there's going to be some Devy guy that you're interested in throwing a dart on. So that's kind of how I prefer the combined route.
So that's good stuff. So I know, like, my first concern was the people who want to set up a league. Now, the second concern is, like, we want to win this league. So what is there any different strategy in terms of Devy? I know, like, ultimately it's still a dynasty league where the same types of guys are scoring the same types of points as any other dynasty league. So how does your strategy differ in a Devy league?
Yeah, my personal biggest advice to a new Devi player is don't get married to the Devi names. All right. So, I mean, these guys, they come in as five stars and then they produce right away as a freshman. And we're so excited about them and so sure that they're going to be a thing. And you always have these guys that it's just like, oh, all of a sudden Sam Howell is a fifth round pick. All of a sudden Zach Evans is a sixth round pick.
Right.
Braylon Allen is a guy who was highly touted, came in, produced right away as a true freshman. Consensus has cooled significantly on Braylon Allen. We'll talk about him later. And so people treat these Devi names as if they're a sure thing. They fall in love with them. They won't trade them. But I would say always be willing to trade them for proven NFL talent because
okay,
as confident as you may be in a guy, the value is not insulated like a draft pick would be. So if I trade for a 2025 first, a year from now, that's going to be a first round pick no matter what. And the value is only going to go up. But if I trade for Evan Stewart at Oregon, and I love Evan Stewart and I'm super excited about him. And for me, he'd be like a top three player in this upcoming class. But if I trade for Evan Stewart and he has a terrible season, he could be getting talked about as a fourth round pick this time next year. The value is not insulated like it would be in a draft pick. So you can't stay married to these guys. You got to stay fluid. I almost treat them like stocks. Like I'll draft a Devi guy just to see his stock go up and then sell him with no intent of him ever actually hitting my dynasty roster.
Okay. Now what about, cause this is always a bit of a controversial topic when it comes to dynasty fantasy football. What about tanking? How is that different in a Devi league?
Yeah, I mean, it's still there. I think it's harder the more depleted that your pool is. It's not as simple as like, I mean, there's a Jaden Daniels this year, but there's not always.
Right.
Right. So in some leagues, the 101 last year, if you were, I'm trying to think back to last year, if there were any of these guys that, I guess the 101 would have been Anthony Richardson in most cases, but he was rostered in some leagues. So if Anthony Richardson was not available, your 101 might have been like Dalton Kincaid,
right?
Or a Devi player, a freshman that you might not hit your roster for three or four more years. So it is harder to build your team that way. And so, like I said, I like to kind of treat these Devi players like stocks, and I'm buying and selling. You have to do a lot more trading, I think, to have an effective rebuild in a Devi league. You can't just expect that, all right, I'm going to suck for a year. I'm going to get a superstar player to add to my roster, and it's just going to be that simple.
I think some people would like that because while I am a noted tanking enthusiast and I really enjoy the rebuild process, and there's no team that I will love more than a team that was 1-13 2 years ago and now has five top 12 dynasty wide receivers. So a lot of people hate that. A lot of people don't have the patience to do it themselves. And then it really irritates them both when they're watching the people tank on purpose and losing games on purpose, and then also when they see the end result and the person has all of these great young players. And so I do think that would be appealing to some people to like, okay, that tip type of strategy is not going to work quite as well in this league. Let's take one more short break, and then we'll get into the meat of this conversation, the rookie talk. Okay, so Matt, I want to start with a conversation you and I had before the show, and you were kind of talking about what your process is like for the Couch Scouts show and how you're attacking these prospects this year. Let's start there, and then we'll get more into like actual evaluations.
Yeah, so my process is pretty heavy on the film side of things. That I've been for over 5 years now, probably closer to 10, have been just getting into the film. I remember years ago watching Christopher Harris and Brett Coleman. They did Film Don't Lie University on their YouTube channel. And it was like, I just ate up every second of it. They were going in trait by trait, showing like what to look for. When you're watching the film, how do you tell if this guy's good at cutting? How do you tell if he's elusive? How do you tell if he is a good route runner? And so I'm mostly self-taught in this stuff, but I really feel like there's an edge to be had still, even with all the resources and the ADP and the content. Like everybody says the edge in Dynasty is gone because the resources are so freely available and it's so saturated. But I still, like last year, I had Stroud QB1 through my whole process start to finish because I got into the tape and I loved what I saw on the tape. And that was against consensus. And ADP wouldn't have told you that. And, you know, people were taking Bryce Young ahead of him. People were taking Anthony Richardson, which, you know, that Anthony Richardson's still a really good player, really good fantasy asset, but faded Quentin Johnston everywhere last year. Didn't get a single share. You know, people were still taking him in the first round. You could have dodged that landmine if you got into the film. I had Achane as my RB3 behind Bijan and Gibbs. So taking him ahead of guys like Charbonnet and Kendre Miller and Tajay Spears, Tank Dell and Jaden Reed were two of my favorite sleepers last year. I took a ton of Tank Dell in the third round of rookie drafts.
Yeah.
And when you can do that, when you go get a third round pick, and this doesn't always happen that they hit at a pretty low rate, but when you can go find a guy that you love on film, believe in it, draft a whole bunch of shares in the third round, and then he becomes like a high-end starter that you can feel great plugging into your lineup every week, or you can trade him for a huge profit. I mean, the value that that adds to your dynasty team is just massive. So I think there's a huge edge to be had through watching film. And I do believe in the analytics and the numbers too. I'm just not strong in that area. I kind of lean on other people and some of the great content creators that are out there doing those models and things like that. And I want to see, like, does what they're seeing on the numbers match up with what I'm seeing on the tape? And if it does, and that tells a story, that's when I feel really, really great about my process.
I think that is like such a key that everybody who's listening, like if you're choosing an analyst, choose one who says, I listen to other people and the things that I don't think I'm as strong at. Like there's certain, our brains are all wired differently. We're all good at different things. And you should be leaning on other people for certain types of evaluation. So I absolutely love that. I do wonder, like you were talking about the film process, and sometimes it disagrees with the numbers. Mm-hmm. Do you always favor the film when that happens? Or are there times where you think, you know, maybe there's something here that like these numbers are just too good. I've got to wait that a little bit.
That's a great question. And, you know, I think every prospect is different and I don't want to be arrogant. I want to stay humble. Right. So even like if I'm just going strictly off of film, there may be a couple other wide receivers that excited me a little bit more than Romo Dunze, in terms of, you know, which but how arrogant would it be if he's a top 10 draft pick? The NFL tells me this is how they feel about him. He's got all these great underlying numbers. And I'm just like, nope, he's my wide receiver 7. You know, I don't see any red flags on Odunze's tape. I think he's a really good player, by the way. So it's not the same as like Quentin Johnston. Last year, I saw some red flags. So he was a first round pick, but I was still fading him. So it's kind of, you got to know when to stick to your guns. Right. And when not to. And so there were some really strong things analytically about Quentin Johnston last year, but also you look at like, okay, he's a big guy, but his contested catch percentage is less than 50%.
Right.
That matches what I see on tape. So there's usually at least some things if you dig into the underlying numbers that will back up what you see on tape. But yeah, it's more of an art than a science for sure.
I agree. Let's talk about some players now. I asked you come up with one player at each position that you find yourself higher on than consensus. We will start with quarterback. Who's a quarterback you really like in this class?
I'm going to say Jaden Daniels, which now that is consensus. So it doesn't feel like a spicy take. But
well, it is. But I was talking to Theo Grimminger yesterday on his show, and he was talking about, because I gave him as like the guy, the quarterback who I feel like I might be the highest on. And he was talking about how you do see Daniels still fall to 104 or 105 and super, like sometimes some of these people are just taking the top three wide receivers over QB2, even if they think it's Daniels. And some people like Dan Schneier here have Drake May as his QB2. So it's like, it may be becoming consensus that Daniels is the QB2, but he's not definitely the 102.
Yeah, I mean, for fantasy purposes, I think Daniels, obviously, with his rushing upside is tremendous. Right. But the reason I say I'm higher on him than consensus is this actually comes into the Devy thing. So earlier in the season, this was months ago, you mentioned Daniels kind of came out of nowhere. Well, this first month or so of the season, I was seeing what he was doing. I was like, hey, guys, we need to take Jaden Daniels seriously. Like, I think he could end up being a first-round NFL draft pick. And at the time, people kind of laughed at that. And I remember saying in your Devy leagues, go trade for Jaden Daniels if he's sitting on a roster. Because some people, depending on how old the Devy league is, right? If it was started up in the last 3 years, probably Jaden Daniels is not rostered. But if it was started up 5-6 years ago, there was a time when Jaden Daniels was starting as a true freshman at Arizona State and everybody was really excited about him. So he's sitting on some Devy rosters. I said, if he's there, go, you know, the manager has probably been holding him for 4 years. He's sick of it. He doesn't think that guy's ever going to become anything. And I literally had listeners reach out and they said, you know, I traded Gus Edwards for Jaden Daniels.
Yeah.
Like straight up. This was a few months ago. And I mean, how does that look now? Like that's
right.
You know, so I don't know if I'm higher than consensus at this point because consensus has caught up, but I definitely would say I was early on Jaden Daniels.
You think he comes, like, let's just assume he's going second overall to the Washington Commanders. So he's got Terry McLaurin, he's got Jahan Dotson, he's got the draft capital. They like everything looks great. Is he a top 12 dynasty quarterback just immediately? How would you compare him to guys that are in that low end QB1 range, the Kyler Murray, the Trevor Lawrence, the Brock Purdy range of dynasty rankings?
That's a great question. I would say he would have the upside, certainly. I mean, we saw what happened, how out of control the hype on Anthony Richardson got like two weeks into his rookie season when he was putting up 20 plus fantasy points off of the rushing upside. And if that injury had not happened, I mean, people would probably be talking about him as a top five dynasty quarterback, right?
For
now.
Sure. 100%.
So I think Jaden Daniels has that kind of upside in his game. Okay. I tend to lean, and it depends on team build. You know, am I rebuilding and looking for a long-term cornerstone, or am I trying to contend right now? I tend to lean more towards the proven guys. I'll swing for upside in some cases, but if I've already seen a guy put up like a top five quarterback season, it's like the meme from, was it Family Guy or whatever, where they're like, it's a mystery box. It could be anything. It could even be Brock Purdy, right?
Chris Towers like, loves that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that I tend to take the approach of like, man, if a guy's already shown me that he can finish as a top 10 quarterback in fantasy, I'm just going to take the sure thing. And But I wouldn't blame anybody for shooting for the upside there. Because if Jaden Daniels hits, I mean, he could not just be in the top 12 conversation, but he could be in the top three, top five conversation, putting up fantasy points at the level of like a Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, just because of, you know, Lamar Jackson. I mean, So
love that comparison. So let's move over to running back here. And it's been I would call it a maligned running back class. So everybody's kind of poo-pooing this class. And I think if Jonathan Brooks had not torn his ACL, then we would view this as a more normal running back class because we'd have our clear RB1 probably, at least consensus-wise. And then I don't hate the class as far as like the 3-6 range. It feels like a pretty normal running back class. It's just it's not as top-heavy as we'd like for it to be. But who's the guy that you find yourself higher on than consensus?
Yeah, and I do love Jonathan Brooks. I would have him as my RB1. But my RB2, that one most people would probably disagree with. I love Bucky Irving. I'm a huge fan of Bucky Irving out of Oregon, especially like after the combine when he totally tanked it. And I'm a guy that I feel like combine testing can be a little bit overrated.
Right.
If a guy looked good on film for 3 years in college, he's probably just a good football player. And I'm not going to drop him way down my rankings because he tested poorly. Now we'll see what kind of draft capital he gets. There's rampant speculation that because of the combine that Bucky Irving's going to fall in the draft. We don't know that. We'll see.
Right.
Obviously if he's a day three draft pick, I'll adjust my rankings. He's not going to be my RB2, but I don't think he would be my RB2 in a normal class. That's where I think some of the weakness of the class comes in. But when I was watching the film, he is fantastic. Like so elusive. He always makes the first guy to get to him miss for a little guy. So he's 5'9 and 192 pounds, I think is what he tested at the combine. He's got phenomenal contact balance. He plays mean. Like he plays the way that I wish some of these bigger backs would play because if they played with the nastiness and the physicality and just the looking to finish every run with a pop and doing doing damage to the defender instead of taking damage. Like if some of those big guys played like that, they'd be monsters.
Right.
But the one in this class that plays like that is Bucky Irving, man. He's got a little bit of Isaiah Pacheco to his game. He's got the best receiving profile of any back in this class. We've seen more and more of these small guys hit in recent years, whether it be Achan Gibbs, James Cook, Kyron Williams. I mean, it used to be that less than 200 pounds was a death sentence. I don't think that's the case anymore.
Right.
And the best combination of traits that I saw on film by far to me was Bucky Irving.
That's so interesting with because the face plant at the combine is definitely going to hurt the ADP. I don't know if it's going to hurt the draft stock. We'll find that out in a month or two. But yeah, if he's a round three pick, then I think you're going to have a real opportunity to get him a lot cheaper probably than you should. We'll move over to wide receiver now. It's a class that's a little bit easier to get excited about the wide receivers in this class. Maybe six of them we like better than any running back. But who's the one that you really find yourself super high on?
I'm going to say Xavier Worthy.
Okay.
Now, this is the guy, and this might make some people mad, that I said, like, if it was just purely on film grade, I might actually take him over Rome. Right. I don't have him ranked above Rome right now. He's my wide receiver four.
Right.
But I think he is a fantastic route runner. Like even as he's been on Devy radars the last few years, cause he's produced since he was a true freshman. Most people viewed him as just a speed guy, just a deep threat. But when I got into the all 22 tape, I was like, man, this guy is running crisp routes. Like he looked like Deontay Johnson out there to me with more juice.
With speed.
Yeah. Like way more juice. So I compared him to the route running of Deontay Johnson with the juice of Jameson Williams, and both of those guys struggle with hands, and so does Xavier Worthy. So that's kind of the one knock is the ball skills and the drops. But even that, like the one season he had a really high drop rate was his sophomore year. He played with a broken hand for most of it. That was much better this season as a junior. So even that concern, I think, is a little bit overblown, but he's incredible after the catch. He's an incredible route runner. I personally believe route running is like the most important trait, because if you can get open, you're going to earn targets and you're going to get volume. And we play in PPR leagues. And to me, like those always open type of guys are just much better fantasy assets than the big bodied contested catch, not always open type of guys. So I love Xavier Worthy. I think he's just got so much upside to be that good of a route runner with that much speed. And I mean, you blink an eye and he's taken the corner. He's defeated an angle, left the defender diving at the air, and it's a house call. So I'm a big, big fan of Xavier Worthy. And he's got the production to back it up. Three straight years, basically, at Texas, at a big Power 5 program, producing from the moment he stepped on the field as a true freshman.
I think it's interesting comparing him, because he obviously had a good combine, so setting the record, but comparing him to Troy Franklin. And Franklin was my wide receiver for before the combine, and I've not changed it yet, but I'm probably going to have to, definitely after the NFL draft, I would say. But how much difference do you see between Worthy and Franklin?
I think they're in the same tier. So like to me, there's a clear top three, and it's Harrison, Neighbors, and Odunze. And then I would say that four through seven is kind of another tier. So right. Worthy, Brian Thomas, Ladd McConkey, and Troy Franklin, I would throw in that tier. I don't think there's a – Troy Franklin's another guy that's got fantastic college production. He's got great traits. I love his release package. I mean, so many times he just dusted a guy straight off the line, and he's incredibly fast for being a taller wide receiver. There's a lot to like about Troy Franklin. I think he's very manipulative at the stem of his route. He's able to kind of put that foot in the ground and manipulate the defense and create a bunch of separation at the stem of the route. So I don't think he's just like a straight line Jalen Hyatt, you know, speed guy either. I think he's got some route running to his game as well. You wish that he was a little bit more physical at 6'2", 6'3", but right. That's not his game. I mean, he's one of these route running types that just happens to have a 6'2" frame.
Right. Yeah. And like you said, with the running backs and the 200 pounds, like that skinny frame has become much more acceptable in the NFL over the last two or three years. It's not quite as worrisome as it used to be. We can talk about the tight ends here if you've got a take on a tight end. I mean, everybody's got a take on Brock Bowers. He's going to be a top seven or eight rookie pick. And then is there anybody else at the position that matters? I'm generally a guy who's more interested in drafting a tight end in round two or round three of a rookie draft than I am in round one. Who should I be looking for in that round two, round three range?
Yeah, I honestly do think it's a weaker class after Bowers than what we've been experiencing. Like, I don't think there's a Sam Laporta or Dalton Kincaid in this draft class after Bowers. But I do think I think JT Sanders, Jatavion Sanders, is a pretty good receiving tight end who showed me, a pretty solid player in college. And he's probably going to get good draft capital. And you can get him pretty late, at least right now in mock drafts. Maybe after he goes high in the real draft, his ADP will start to climb. But right now in mock drafts, I think he's getting totally overlooked. And so I do think he could be a value just based on where I'm seeing mock draft ADP right now. And then my philosophy with tight ends, I like to throw darts on athleticism, because if you look at all the top tight ends, whether it be a Travis Kelce, Darren Waller in his heyday, George Kittle, Hockenson, all of these guys are like 9+ out of 10 on the RAS, the relative athletic score. So shout out to Kentley Platt for putting that together. But if I'm throwing a dart in round three, round four, give me these guys with like a 9+ on the RAS. So guys like Jaheim Bell, Ben Sinnott, I believe Dalen Holker falls into that category. Theo Johnson was almost a 10 out of 10. Like, if I'm getting in these late rounds and there's nobody else left that I like, especially if it's a tight end premium league, I'm just going to throw a dart on one of these really athletic tight ends and hope that he figure it out.
I'm glad you mentioned Theo. Dan Schneider had him as his tight end actually over Sanders before the combine. So he was very excited about what Johnson did at the combine. I think that's a good approach. Now, you mentioned these round three, round four picks. That's where we will finish here, but not talking about tight ends. Let's talk about some running backs or wide receivers, maybe even a quarterback that you think might follow that range. Who are your favorite dart throws in those round three, round four range? I love to ask this question, especially in the months leading up to the draft, because last year we did have some people saying Puka Nacua, and now we get to go back and talk about how smart they are. So give us somebody to talk about how smart you are in a year.
Yeah, the easy answer for me here is Bucky. I mean, I already talked about Bucky Irving and how much I love him. After the combine, I did a mock draft, and I don't know what ADP would look like, but I got him at 310. Like, immediately the week after the combine, I was doing a mock draft. I was on the board at 210, and he was my highest-ranked player, but I took somebody else just to see, like, will he fall to me at 310? And he did. So if his ADP is anything like that, he's probably going to be my Tank Dell for this year, which I just scooped up so many Tank Dell round three shares last year. And Bucky, I think, would be that guy for me. I also really like Ricky Pearsall. He's a little bit of an older prospect at 24 years old. And consensus is kind of coming around on him a little bit. I've seen him usually going in round two these days. But if he was in the third round, I'd be really excited to draft Ricky Pearsall. I think he's a fantastic route runner. Great, great ball skills. Does everything well. Another guy I'd throw out there, Audric Estime. I actually liked his tape quite a bit. I thought he was what everybody wanted Braylon Allen to be in terms of being a big guy that actually finishes his runs with a boom and plays with pretty consistent power and contact balance. And I thought he had a little bit of juice. Now, obviously the combine, I mean, you're kind of seeing a trend here. People that get left for dead after the combine that I thought were a good player before the combine, I'm just going to take the discount. So Estime was typically going in round two of rookie mocks before the combine. Then he goes out and runs a 4.72. And now he's like always round three, sometimes even round four. And so I don't mind taking that discount. I could definitely see him having a role on the NFL level, being at least a flex-worthy player for your fantasy team. And then I'll throw out a quarterback and Spencer Rattler.
Yeah.
I think he's had – his issues have been more on the mental side of things than – I mean, he's just so physically gifted. He can make every throw. He's got good mobility. He's got every trait that an NFL team is looking for in a quarterback. I almost think he's taken like a little bit of a Baker Mayfield path in terms of Baker needed to be humbled a little bit.
Right.
And I think Rattler had a little bit of that like gunslinger cockiness to him when he was at Oklahoma, and he just started throwing too many picks and his mechanics got wonky. And quietly these last couple of years at South Carolina, I think he's improved his character. He's improved his game. And I'd be surprised if he gets out of round two of the NFL draft. Some team is going to take a chance on that kind of talent. And if there was one guy that, you know, would start his career as a backup, but sometimes somebody gets hurt and then he takes the job and never gives it back, I think it would be Spencer Rattler. So in a super flex league, you can get him third, fourth round. And I think that's great value.
Great, great stuff. Once again, that's Matt Cooper at Couch Scouts FF on Twitter. You can go find the Couch Scouts show and Discord. Matt told you about it earlier in the show. Please go check that out. Matt, I really appreciate you being on. Once again, just a kind of a programming note, we will not have a show on Friday. So once again, we will talk to you next Tuesday.